it is being increasingly assumed in current public opinion that we live in post-truth area. A consequence of this is that judgment of the most important realities of human life has been left in the hands of mere emotions, which in the opinion of Joshua Ratzinger is building a dictatorship of relativism that does not recognize anything as definitive and whose ultimate goal consists solely of one's own ego and desires. Does this age of post-truth affect how the personal being is understood? From the fruitful encounter between faith and reason, Western culture has articulated his worldview of man and human life based on the concept of the person. However, these days we talk of non-human persons when referring to orangutans, cyborg, etc. In such a context, it is extremely useful to redirect our attention towards the concept of truth in order to help adequately substantiate a reality as basic as that of the personal being. And this is the subject of this present study. For this, we will attempt to argue that primacy in the analogous meaning of what is true corresponds precisely to the person, as a subsistence whose esse is intelligible of himself. And from there, it will be concluded that the perfective dynamism of personal life is conducted in eminent fashion in the communication of the truth through the world. Following St. Thomas Aquinas, this thesis has been defended in the Thomistic School of Barcelona, mainly by Jaime Bofill and Francisco Canals. Summarizing what we wish to develop later regarding the question, the latter says, not only in the line of transcendental good, but also in the line of transcendental truth, we must affirm that the primacy of the spiritual subsistence of the person. Only the person is capable not only of the language about what is, but also of being that one to whom one can say what the spirit is originally and constitutively capable of seeing. We only talk to persons. 1. The primacy of the universal in the intelligible order. The thesis set out by Canals consists, therefore, of affirming that the person, in his singularity, is first in the order of transcendental truth. However, in the face of this, we must begin with a not inconsiderable objection, namely, that it seems that what is true must be said first of the universal, and not of the person, which is singular. This is what we read in St. Thomas himself. The natural desire of the rational creature is to know everything that belongs to the perfection of the intellect, namely, the species and the genera of things and their types. And this everyone who sees the divine essence will see in God. But to know of other singulars, their thoughts and their deeds, does not belong to the perfection of the created intellect, nor does its natural desire tend to these things. Jaime Bofill laments that an unfortunate interpretation of this passage has led many authors to conceive the intellectual goal in the horizontal plane of generalized abstraction. Before resolving our objection, it seems useful to know how the primacy of the universal has been established in the order of intelligible. And we are of the opinion that the affirmation of such primacy is the result of judging the belonging of knowledge as such, that which is only specific to man's knowledge. Let's see why. The corporeal condition of man necessarily involves limitations that live in intellect impotency with respect to the intelligible. How then does human intellect reach the actuality of knowing? We can identify various solutions. Thus, for some, the intelligible is found in the same singular corporeal being, which will then be intelligible in itself prior to the act of knowing. Scotistics and nominalics, entitative intuitionism. In contrast, for others, it is necessary to take the intelligible to the intellect, separating it from the singular corporeal being, with a universal species resulting from this separation. This species would be known either intuitively, rationalistic and idealistic, eidetic intuitionism, or through representation, Aristotelian Thomistic conceptualism. However, it seems as if a certain universal agreement has been generalized, inasmuch that intuition is the mode that corresponds to the essence of knowing as such, together with a rejection of the concept as representation, accusing it of substituting and moving away thus from reality. Henri Bergson, for example, says, "Here is a point upon which everyone will agree. If senses and consciousness had an unlimited scope, if in the double direction of matter and spirit the power of perceiving was unlimited, there would be no need to conceive nor to reason. This way, the object could be reached in the intelligibility that it would in itself have prior to the act of knowing." We read this, for example, in Francisco Suarez. "And if it is argued that such a species is required as a substitute instead of the object, this will easily be refuted, because the object, and therefore everything that substitutes it, precedes the act of knowing. Then it cannot be produced by it. The primacy of intuition, which would be the proper way of knowing as such, leads to affirm, except in nominalism, the primacy of the universal in the order of the intelligible, which, not to depart from reality, is intuitively known. In other words, we once again encounter the Platonic world of ideas, where idea means what is seen." Canals offer us a succinct account of these forms of eidetic intuitionism that consecrate the primacy of the universal. Hence, the immediatist postulate demands attribute the character of true reality and only truly known, that is, intuited, to the contents of the intellect, to the ideas, that is, the realities seen. While recognizing as the most proper seeing or perceiving the capturing of them, from the being contemplated by the Leatics, and even from the numbers of and figures of the Pythagoreans, from the intelligible world constituted by the hierarchy of ideas, genera, a species of the Platonists, even the clear and distinct ideas of Cartesianism, and even the essences or the values grasped through immediate intuition according to modern phenomenology, the intuitionist postulate has worked in all these cases to affirm the immediate patency of cognitive contents, universally attainable by every man who has truly achieved knowing. The brief state of affairs places us before a primacy of the universal in the intelligible order, which go hand in hand with the primacy of intuition. This way, what is proper to man's way of knowing due to his corporeal limitation, that is, generalization abstraction, has ended up being postulated as corresponding to knowing as such, in a way that universality has become the formal reason of intelligibility. 2. The essence of truth and reason of intelligibility. Let us now try to contrast the approach set out above with St. Thomas Aquinas' metaphysic of knowledge in an attempt to determine whether, according to the latter, universality is the formal reason of intelligibility. First of all, it is worth recognizing that the aforesaid primacy of intuition at the universal is explained ultimately by having forgotten that the esse is act and perfection, as Domingo Báñez states. And this is what St. Thomas most frequently claims and what Thomists do not want to hear, that the esse is the actuality of every from our nature and is not found in anything as container and perfectible, but as received and perfective of that it which is received. Indeed, that the esse is act and perfection allows to understand knowing formally as a certain esse. This way, whatever belongs to the essence of knowledge as such, including the reason of intelligibility, should also be understood as act and perfection. In contrast, forgetting this fundamental metaphysical principle is what leads us to judge knowledge and intelligibility only from the perspective of potentiality. We can see this in St. Thomas Aquinas, identifying in his work the different meanings of truth, that is, of intelligibility. The first of this meaning is precisely the esse as an act, as the foundation of all truth or intelligibility. For this reason, it must be said that the object of knowledge is not primarily the truth, but the esse of the thing. St. Thomas says, "Truth is defined according to that which precedes the concept of true, and in which what is true is founded, is defined by Augustine in the Book of Soliloquies, that true is what is. Verum is quod est." A second meaning is that which refers to every being that, insofar as it has the form that corresponds to it, is true or intelligible, that is, adequate to be understood. Everything is true, according as it has the form proper to its nature. By virtue of the second meaning, it is also said that intellect, as a knowing being, is true or intelligible inasmuch that it has the form that corresponds to it, which is the species of or likeness of the known thing. The intellect, continues the aforementioned text, insofar as it is knowing, must be true so far as it has the likeness of the thing known, that being its form. Finally, in a third meaning, true is the conformity between the known form and the thing of which it's similar. This being its form as knowing continues the same text. For this reason, truth is defined by the conformity of intellect and thing, and hence to know this conformity is to know through. Yet it does not apprehend it by knowing of a thing what it is. When, however, it judges that a thing corresponds to the form which it apprehends about that thing, the first it knows and expresses truth. This third meaning is what is signified by the definitions given by Aquinas, citing St. Hilary and St. Augustine, that is, truth as a manifestation of the esse. In a third way, what is true is defined as the effect that follows, and Hilary defines it as saying that what is true is what manifests and declares the esse. And Augustine, in the book De Vera Religione, says that the truth is that through which what is revealed. Therefore, the most proper meaning of truth is given in saying what a thing is, and not in the apprehension of the species. Assuming this distinction of the different meanings of truth in Aquinas, we can now ask ourselves what is the reason of the intelligibility of the being, adequate to be understood, as well as that of the species in the intellect, adequate to be known in its conformity with the thing. And the answer lies in the first meaning of truth, the esse in act. St. Thomas says, in the same way, the esse of the thing, the esse of the thing, not its truth, is the cause of the truth in the intellect. Hence the philosopher says that a thought or a word is true from the fact that a thing is, not because a thing is true. Let us now take another step. As there is no universal subsistence, we must deny that the formal reason of the intelligibility of the being is universality, but rather the actuality of the esse. This way, the unintelligible corresponds to the potential. And as the most potential is matter, that is why human intellect must abstract from the material to be able to know, resulting then the universal in predicando. But then, the reason of intelligibility is not the universality, but in the immateriality proper to the actual. The universal, Canals state, precisely because is what can be said with respect to many subjects, and for the reason something that in its direct intelligibility does not properly exist nor is apt to exist, is not intelligible because of its universality, but only because of its immateriality. Hence, it should be said that something is unintelligible due to its singularity, but as we have just stated, due to its materiality. Let's see this important thesis regarding the reason of the intelligibility of the being in two noteworthy texts of Aquinas. The first, The human soul is a certain individuated form, and equally its potency, which we call possible intellect, and the forms understood in act. For something is understood in act because it is immaterial, and not because it is universal. But rather, the universal has to be intelligible because it is abstracted from the individuating material principles. However, it is evident that separate substances are intelligible in act, and yet are certain individuals. And the second text, of the singulars that exist in bodily things, there is no intellection in us, not because of singularity, but because of matter, which is the principle of their individuation. Therefore, is there are some singular subsistence without matter, such as the angels, nothing prevents them from being intelligible in act. 3. The person, in material subsistence, intelligible to itself. In these last two texts, we have just read that the separated substances are intelligible in act, and yet are certain individuals, and that as far as singular subsistence without matter is concerned, such as angels, nothing prevents them from being intelligible in act. This statement takes us to the central point of our thesis. According to the conclusion we have just reached regarding the reason of intelligibility, we can state that angels are intelligible in act because of the actuality of their esse, excluding all potential materiality. And it is because of this immateriality that they can return to their own essence and know themselves in the actuality of their singular esse. Aquinas says with remarkable audacity, if an ark could be subsistent by itself without matter, it would understand itself, because the immunity from matter is the essential reason of intellectuality. In a sense, the singular can be said to be universal, but in causando, not in predicando. Inasmuch as a being is more universal in its causality, as it is more act. The separated substances are universal and the first causes of esse. That is why God, pure act, is the universal and cause. However, this intelligibility must also be said of human intellect, given its immateriality. Although it is less than that of angels and much less than that of God. Therefore, St. Thomas states, is there be an immaterial singular such as the intellect, there is no reason why it should not be intelligible. Of course, the corporeal condition of man implies that his intellect is in potency to know and to know itself, having to pass to the act of understanding through the abstraction carried out by the active intellect, which is nothing but the same intelligible light of the subsistent soul itself. Canals explained this in the following manner. If intelligibility is constituted by immateriality and not by universality, that is, the universal is intelligible because it is immaterial. It is understood that St. Thomas can attribute the character of intelligibility to the spiritual and existent singular, despite the contingency, facticity, and temporality which characterizes all spiritual realities, as it is immediately experienced by human conscience. Therefore, if we propose a proportional gradation of intelligible realities, we must say that the most intelligible is the most actual and immaterial, namely, the singular intellectual subsistent. Below this, and because of the dependence of matter, the intelligible is in a situation of potentiality. It will only become intelligible in act in the same knowing of the intelligent, precisely thanks to the actuality of its esse. In effect, there is no truth if there is no intellect. Referring this to God, Aquinas states, if there were no eternal intellect, there would be no eternal truth either. Now, every intellectual subsistence that knows and loves itself in its own esse and makes the intelligible in act has received since ancient times the name of singular dignity, which is that of person. Aquinas says, particular individual finds themselves in a much more specific and perfect way in rational substances which dominate their acts, being not only moved like others, but also acting by themselves. Actions are in singulars, thus among all substances, singular substances of a rational nature have a special name. This name is person. And thus, it must be recognized that the person is a good, beloved in himself, with love of friendship. In effect, mankind is not loved, rather, Peter of John, or Frodo of Sam. Therefore, the personal being occupies the primacy in the analogical scale of the good. However, in addition, the person is intelligible to himself by the subsistent actuality of his esse, on which it depends that the intelligible in potency is made intelligible in act. The intellectual subsistent then also possesses primacy in the analogical scale of what is true. This thesis, concludes Canals, leads us to conceive the truth, the immaterial perfectivity of the being, as an esse in act, a perfection and ontological plenitude, of which immaterial subsistent personal beings fully and in a different and more complete sense that the same objective essences of the natural beings participate. Personal beings possess the truth in the proportional analogical scale of the transcendental truth in a different and more perfect way than that in which beings that are outside the order of the immaterial and intellectual, of the intelligible order, possess it, and are only intelligible in potency by extrinsic and objective intelligibility. 4. Personal dialogue, communication of the truth. Coming now to our conclusion, we must recognize in the actuality of the esse an inclination to communicate its own perfection. The nature of any act consists of communicating itself as much as possible, from which is derived that each agent acts insofar as it is in act. From there, it is inferred that the personal being, aware of itself by the actuality of its subsistent esse, tends therefore to be communicative and manifestative of what it is. And the means is nothing else but the true word that says the known. Moreover, only the personal being is likewise the recipient of that true word, the one to whom one can talk. Only the person is capable, Canal says, not only the language about what is, but also of being the one to whom one can say what the spirit is originally and constitutively capable of saying. All language with intelligible meaning is vital communication at the level of personal spirit, in the line of knowledge of reality as such, and in the line of moral action, or interpersonal social coexistence, as in the line of rational efficiency or technical performance, is of itself exclusively destined to be received consciously and intelligible by personal beings. We only talk to persons. In the theoretical or moral order, in the normative order of political life, in the regulative or evaluating order of rational efficiency. This way, and in the face of the disintegrating post-truth of human life, we need to state that the perfective dynamism of man occurs in the communication of truth through the world. And it is thanks to this that friendship is possible. In effect, the affective union between friends is only understood in the light of the real union, rooted in the communicative world of one's own personal life. Referring to the truth as the foundation of the recognition of the dignity of the personal being, Jaime Bofills states, through it, loneliness is definitively overcome, as our aspiration to be understood, appreciated, loved, as well as those of an opposite direction, are equally satisfied to pour into others the fullness of our heart in peaceful confidence. Through them, man is situated in his true environment, namely the family and society, and occupies his place in the universe. The measure of this perfection and of the corresponding joy will become visible for us by the consideration of what this means. The enrichment of a person through what is most valuable in the entire universe, namely another person. Who vows himself not in any of his more or less external aspect or goods, but by introducing us into the intimacy of his life and being. St. Thomas Aquinas draws from this fruitful thesis to refer to the same friendship with Christ, with whom one enters into communion through the communication of truth, which is his own person. Aquinas says in his commentary on the Gospel of St. John, here he places the true sink on friendship on his part, which is, what I heard from my father, I let you know. Indeed, the true sink of friendship is that a friend reveals the secrets of the heart to his friend. Indeed, because the heart of friends are one single heart and one single soul, it does not seem that the friend places outside of his heart what he reveals to his friend. For God, making us sharers of his wisdom, reveals to us his secrets, communicating to the holy souls through the nations constituted friends of God and prophets. Hence, what Pope Benedict XVI concisely expressed at the beginning of his encyclical Caritas in Veritate. In Christ, charity in truth becomes the face of his person, a vocation to love our brothers in the truth of his plan. Indeed, he himself is the truth. Thank you for your attention.
Can we say then that, is there friendship within the Trinity, in God's own life? Is God friends with himself?
My English is not very, very good. Huh? Excuse me. Huh? But I intend answering in English. When Thomas Aquinas speak about friendship in man, he say that first is the love to himself, and it is the unity in himself is more than the union with the friends. And this unity of himself is the root, the principle for all, after the union with the friends. If this is in man, in God, in the Trinity, is infinitive more. The unity of God is more, infinitive more than the friendship.
Thank you for your talk. Just a quick question. I understand why the singular can be most intelligible, but why do we say that the person is most intelligible, like Christ, instead of saying that God is most intelligible?
Can you repeat the...
So why couldn't we say that God himself is the most intelligible, God himself is the truth? Why do we have to make the next step that, in fact, an individual rational substance, a person, is the highest truth?
If I understand the question... God in itself, in himself, is the most intelligible. But no. God is a personal being. God is personal, so the plenitude of the definition of person we find in God. So the intelligibility in itself is perfect in God. Is the most intelligible in himself, like a personal being. So it's for the reason that we, when Thomas Aquinas ask if we can use the concept of person for to talk about God, is because if personal is the most perfect in all nature, so better in God. So the intelligibility in itself is perfect in God because is the most perfect personal being.
Thank you so much, Dr. Martinez. That was a very interesting lecture. It made me think a lot about the second book of Augustine's On the Creatures of the World, in which he makes an argument for truth on a kind of scale like you're suggesting as well. The question I have is pretty simple. I'm curious about dissimilitude, dissimilarity. And when you discuss analogy, I want to know where the dissimilitude is between speaking about God and the creature. If you could speak to that question.
The friend who helped me for the English. Well,
si acaso me ayudas a traducir.
He says that St. Thomas makes very clear that we know of God more what he isn't than what he is. So we have to affirm that even in everything that we predicate of God. So even when we say that God is intelligible in himself, so what we know of intelligibility, we know first in ourselves, and then we apply to God. And we know ourselves starting from the potentiality, the potency in our knowing. So what we have to deny when we predicate intelligibility of God is that very potency.
Thank you very much, Doctor, for your words tonight. I have a question about your three meanings of truth and how they apply to the affirmation of the primacy of the person in the scale of truth. That is, it seems that, according to the first meaning, before the presentation, we agreed that the person is highest in the scale of esse and goodness. And according to the second meaning, you could say the person, by their immateriality, has the form corresponding to them in an especially perfect way. But your third meaning was that the true is found in the conformity between the known form and the thing. Would it be right to say then, is it right to say that only when the person actually is in actual self-knowledge or is actually knowing himself that the person finds his place at this peak of the scale of truth?
So the three meanings are three meanings of truth, not three meanings of what a person is. And the first sense is of the being that all things have by which they are intelligible. And the third sense of truth is the correspondence between that form and the being in of the thing.
The correspondence between the form and
The correspondence between the form and the thing itself. And he declares, he manifests that in a word. If we transfer this to the person, the first meaning is that the person is a person by his being.
No por su conciencia.
Not through his conscience.
Eso es muy importante.
And that's very important. It's due to his being that he can know. But the property of his being is to know.
Professor Martinez, thank you very much for your talk. That one is clear and also very clarifying. Thank you. I have a question. If as you say, the person is occupies the top spot on the scale of goods, where do we place on that scale the goods that perfect the person? And I'm thinking especially about the intelligible goods, specifically goods of order, like the good of the family, the good of the city, the good of the cosmos. It's curious that St. Thomas, when he talks about why it is that God creates, he doesn't specify the person necessarily is the end of his creation, but rather the good of the whole order of the cosmos as that which he has in view. So I'm wondering if the person then occupies the top level of the scale of good, where, how do we understand the goodness of those other goods and where they fit on the scale? Mm-hmm. Precisely those goods that perfect the person.
So St. Thomas clarifies that all the created goods are ordered towards the good of the person, not just the material goods, but moral goods, social goods, spiritual goods. And St. Thomas clarifies this, especially when he speaks of friendship. And friendship is expressed in the benevolence where one friend seeks the good for his friend. The hierarchy of goods then is based on the greater good that is wished for or done to the friend, the greater that good will be. And that's why the spiritual goods are greater than the material goods. But St. Thomas also says that the greatest good that there is to communicate one's own personal life to the friend. And that's precisely what we find in the giving of Christ and the friendship of Christ and giving his own person for his friends.
Maybe, would you be willing to try, if you speak Spanish into the microphone and then I give another microphone?
Oh, well.
Because there are many people who speak Spanish, I think, also.
Oh. For me, no problem, eh? To speak Spanish.
Thank you so much, Dr. Martinez. I'm right here. For your wonderful paper.
Thank you.
You correlated the most immaterial with the most intelligible.
Mm-hmm.
And so the question I have in particular...
Saint Thomas.
Yeah. And we're following the intelligent common doctor here, as always. My question then is with the human person,
mm-hmm,
as soul and body.
Yes.
And how does our intelligibility then change, our intelligibility to ourselves or to others, human persons, say as a separated soul while we await the resurrection of the body? Like, is there a change because we are more immaterial as a separated soul, it seems, than as when we receive our bodies again at the resurrection of the dead? So maybe I'm just misunderstanding the question, but insofar as we're correlating immateriality and intelligibility, I'm wondering how do we correlate then the body as part of the human person in this question?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
One moment, please. Sí. Nosotros podemos esperar a ese momento para saberlo mejor.
Yeah, we can wait until that moment to find out.
Pero sí que partiendo de los principios que he explicado,
but following from the principles that I've explained,
en esta vida nuestra corporeidad, que es nuestra naturaleza,
in this life our bodiliness, which is our, in our nature,
y que esta naturaleza corpórea nos permite, por ejemplo, tener hijos, y esto dice Santo Tomás, que nos hace en esto más semejantes a Dios que los ángeles.
And that in this corporeal nature we're able to have children, reproduce, which makes us more akin to God than even the angels.
Pero esta corporeidad es la que deja nuestra inteligibilidad en potencia.
But this bodiliness is what leaves our intelligibility in potency.
Y no podemos tener ser inteligibles en acto para nosotros mismos mientras no estamos en acto de conocer lo que las cosas son por abstracción.
And we can't be we can't understand ourselves in act until we
Estamos en acto de conocer lo que las cosas son por abstracción.
Until we are in act to know what things are by abstraction.
Abstraction of the matter. El alma separada del cuerpo no tiene que abstraer.
The separated soul doesn't have to abstract.
Su conocimiento, no obstante, no es el que le corresponde por naturaleza.
But its knowledge isn't the one that corresponds to itself by nature.
Pero el conocimiento que tenga el alma separada,
the knowledge that the separated soul will have,
será en su inmaterialidad más luminoso para sí que en esta vida.
Will be because of its immateriality, it will be a more luminous knowledge than the knowledge in this life.
Gracias, profesor ilustrado. Pero la pregunta del señor fue, no fue exactamente eso, fue más cómo nos conocemos como personas, dado que somos personas, también somos seres materiales. Uh-huh. Es parte, como usted dijo, es parte de nuestra naturaleza. Entonces, la pregunta fue que sí, inmaterialidad, la espiritualidad fue el principio de nuestra conocer de uh-huh. nosotros. ¿Cómo es posible que la más alta es, cómo nos conocemos también, como el cuerpo es parte de esa persona que es uh-huh. la alteza de bueno, de
sí, sí, bien?
De bien.
Uh-huh.
Can you repeat your question in English?
I thought that the gentleman's question was not only how is it that as separated substances we know better or how knowledge will change, but also how do we understand the person, given that the person, the human person, has corporality as a central part of its nature. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. En esta vida corpórea nosotros nos reconocemos como personas.
In this corporeal life, we recognize ourselves, we know ourselves as persons.
Nos reconocemos como personas gracias al conocimiento que tenemos de nosotros mismos.
We know ourselves as persons thanks to the knowledge that we have of ourselves as persons.
Y del conocimiento que tenemos de nosotros mismos en nuestra singularidad.
And of the knowledge that we have of ourselves in our singularity.
Pero ¿cómo nos reconocemos en esta singularidad?
But how do we recognize ourselves in this singularity?
En todo acto que nosotros realizamos,
in the acts that we realize,
en todo acto consciente que nosotros realizamos, en todo acto consciente, nosotros tenemos percepción actual de nuestro propio ser en acto.
In every conscious act we have an actual perception of ourselves in act.
Santo Tomás explica que hay una duplex cognitio, un doble conocimiento del alma.
There's a double cognition of the soul.
El primero es por abstracción.
The first by abstraction.
Y es un conocimiento universal de qué es el alma.
And it's a universal conception of what is the soul.
Pero el segundo es el conocimiento del alma secundum quod habet esse in tal individuo, según que tiene ser en tal individuo.
The second is the knowledge of the soul
según que tiene ser ese,
according to which it has being,
en tal individuo, en este individuo.
In this individual.
Es un conocimiento singular de sí mismo. Y esto se da primero porque el propio ese es singular e incomunicable.
And this is because the one's own being is at first individual and incommunicable.
Más que being, ese.
Yes.
y lo propio del ese es en su dinamismo perfectivo es comunicar esa propia perfección singular del ese a sus acciones.
And the ese's perfective dynamism is in communicating its own ese to the perfections.
Perfect. Y por eso las acciones singulares revelan a uno mismo y a los otros la propia singularidad personal.
That's why one's individual actions reveal to oneself and to others the individuality of oneself.
Las propias acciones y las propias palabras.
One's own actions and one's own words.
La acción de cada uno y la palabra de cada uno es singular.
One's actions and one's words are individual, singular.
Aunque yo diga una palabra y otro diga la misma, cada uno la dice según su propio modo personal de decirla.
Even if I say a word and another person says the same word, each one says it according to a singular individual modality.
Y esto va muy unido a la propia corporeidad. Muy vinculado, muy unido a la propia corporalidad.
And this is very tied together to one's own corporality, one's own body.
Cada uno tiene su propia corporeidad, su propio cuerpo, que es principio de su individualidad.
Each one has his own body, which is the principle of his individuality.
Por eso, en el hombre, todo lo que dice razón de singularidad manifiesta su ser personal.
Which is why in man everything that is singular individual manifests his own individuality.
Una cosa más. El nombre one more thing. El nombre persona en griego es prosopon.
The name person in Greek is prosopon.
Y prosopon, que suele decirse que significa máscara.
Prosopon, which I know means mask.
El primer significado es rostro.
The first meaning is face.
¿Y cómo distinguimos a cada uno en su individualidad?
And how do we distinguish each one in his individuality?
La policía por la huella digital.
The police by the fingerprints.
Pero yo he reconocido a mi amigo Eduardo por su rostro.
But I've recognized my friend Eduardo by his face.
Que estamos igual que hace muchos años.
We're the same as many years ago.
Es el rostro corpóreo manifiesta el ser personal.
The bodily face is what manifests the personal being.
Y por eso, en el rostro de Cristo se manifiesta la gloria de Dios.
Which is why in the face of Christ is manifest the glory of God.
Eso lo dice San Pablo.
So it's that simple.
Well, I think that's a very fine place to stop our discussion today. Let's give our thanks to Dr. Martinez.